Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life Radio Show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Dr. Joanne White, and I am so pleased to be here today and really honored to have two very special, very diverse guests on my show today. And the first guest is a friend and colleague of mine, Amasita Maloon Gibson, and she is a wonderful presenter. She is the founder and the CEO of ATICMG Center for Excellence, which is a nonprofit organization that's committed to improving the quality of education, community services, and resources to at-risk youth and to their families. Her organization provides services to disenfranchised populations in the areas of academics, mentoring, scholarships, leadership development, and life skills. The for-profit entity is called MGAA Professional Development Institute, which provides workshops, seminars, keynotes, and products for growing and empowering future leaders. Sita's a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel with honorable and distinguished service to our nation, as well as a published author, a Drury University and Webster University alumni, and she holds a professional HR certificate from Cornell University. And she has a wonderful recent bestseller called Stepping Stones to Success, which is co-authored with Deepak Chopra, Jack Canfield, and Dr. Dennis Waitley. So Sita and I have been friends for some time through our organization that we both belong to, the Professional Women Network. And last year, Sita had a presentation for all these wonderful men and women who were at the international conference. And I spoke with her just a little while ago and asked her to share the story because it's a beautiful story about giving back. So without any further ado, hello, I'm going to call you Sita because I'm your friend. Hello, Sita, how are you?
Well, hello, Dr. White, and how are you? I am so happy and delighted to have to be a guest and to be honored just to be a part of this wonderful broadcast.
Well, we
are
welcome
you. Are you doing well?
Tell us that.
I am doing well.
Oh, yes, I'm doing well. But you know what? We're having trouble hearing you, so can you speak up or get closer to the mic?
Tell us a
little better. Tell us about that story that you told at the conference last year, because I think it's a beautiful way that really shows who you are and your principles, your values, and just what you do on this planet. That's so, not only one small bit of what you do on this planet, but that's so beautiful and wonderful as a way of giving back.
Well, I guess I tell so many stories, but I guess you are referring to the one in reference to where me and a group of my friends, we take a vacation to somewhere in the Caribbean. And one year we decided to go to Aruba. And every time we take a trip, we also find a way to give back. You know, give back meaning we want to give back of who we are and what we have become. And we try to find an orphanage or some nonprofit that we can help. We went to Aruba, and in our trip to Aruba, we coordinated with the Department of Tourism and everything like that. And whilst we were there, we went to Imelda Hof. Imelda Hof is the only Dutch orphanage that they have in Aruba. And Aruba is located in the West Indies in the Caribbean. And whilst we were there at Imelda Hof, they gave us a grandiose tour, and I had taken several copies of my my first project, my first book, Joy Unspeakable, A Spiritual Jambalaya, which is used to empower and encourage women, young people, to their next level. And I said I was going to give several copies away, and that's what we did. But however, while we were there, we found that there was a need and a void at Imelda Hof. They had a beautiful facility where they take care of abandoned youth and ages infant up to, I think it was like 14 years, 13 or 14 years old. And they had a medical facility that was already built, a small room, but it was not furnished. We asked them how we could help, and they said we could help by providing donations if we can for their medical clinic. And so we asked them for a list of donations, and what we think for granted here in the United States, other people has great value and access for. And what it was, they wanted cotton balls, Q-tips, seven C's, that was vitamins, bandages, alcohol, little simple things like that. So what I did, and I'm sure some of my colleagues said what I did, I went back and we talked about it, and what I did, I went back and we got together, and some people send on their own. And what I did from my company, from ATIC and MG Center for Excellence and MGAA, I send them Q-tips, cotton balls, all those things that they wanted. I also mentioned it to a couple of missionaries from several local organizations in my community, and I think they send them information as well, and products as well. And to ship what I sent cost so much. I said, oh, this is ridiculous. It costs a lot to ship it, but it met the need. So I said, I can't just do a one-time need. So I wrote a company. I don't know if I can mention that company. I wrote a company, and a medical company. It was Johnson's. I took it off of the baby lotion. I wrote them and tell them what the need was. And I think it was about 6 weeks later, I got a contact letter, and someone said, where's this place at? I give them all the information, and I asked them, well, what I did is I asked them if they can supply them with cotton balls and so forth. And, you know, at the beginning it was a little challenge, but then after they supplied the orphanage with cotton balls, Q-tips, and those products that they had to sustain. Then what I did is I collected resources, a little over $1,200, and we sent it and donated to the orphanage, and the orphanage used that to continue their mission.
It's such a wonderful story, and what it demonstrates to people is that, well, you are very positioned in terms of your business, but people don't have to be. They can find a need, they can make contact like you did with the company, and find ways to really give back on a tremendous level. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Because I think that it says so much about who you are. But I want to shift to your books, because
okay.
I know there's a new one on the way, which we'll talk about, and the Stepping Stones to Success. I'm looking at my copy right now. See, it's right here, and I remember buying it and getting a hug from you. But the chapter that you have is all about helping youth and other people reach their success, getting stepping stones. So before we even move on to that, how would you define success? There are so many definitions, but I'm sure our listeners are interested in your definition of success, because you exemplify it in everything that you do.
Well, really, I like to say success is, for me, success is when you can be what you want to be and do what you want to do. Live anywhere you want to live and experience, just experience life, living life to the fullest. But actually, success is a direct result of failure. I like to tell people that if we look at it that way, because our failures teaches us to be successful. Because if you fail at something and you're a person that would be successful, you'll take that failure as a tip or a nugget to become better.
You know, that's so true, because so many inventors and people both in the medical field and even in terms of inventions for electricity and the telephone, they went through so many, as you call, failures or experiences that didn't work till they finally got to a place where they met success. But I think what they put into it and what you demonstrate in so much of what you do is persistence. So they failed, they didn't run away like so many people do and say, oh, I failed, forget it. They endured, they persisted, and they moved on. And that's so important. Now,
and also success is about living without limits, helping others to be successful. You cannot be successful unless you help others up to become successful.
You know, that's so true, and you demonstrate that in everything that you do, even when you went on vacation. And that was the brilliance of that story. There you were going on vacation, but for you, the vacation was also a way of giving back. It wasn't just, oh,
exactly.
I'm going to lounge around. Now, tell us a little bit about your book, your Stepping Stones. You call yourself an empowerment coach, which is beautiful. So tell us a little bit of what your meaning of empowerment is.
Okay, empowerment is basically taking people, taking an individual and giving them, stimulating their innermost being to become better. That's what I say empowerment is. It's to make another person better than where they are, leading them or growing them from where they are, letting them see the resourcefulness and the meaning in their life. You know, sort of like changing their way of thinking.
And that's not always easy to do, but you've gone through a lot of your own challenges and obstacles and have come out beautifully on the other side. So what do you think are the biggest obstacles that many people face when they're attempting to be successful?
I think the biggest obstacles most people have is themselves. That's number one. They put self in the way because most people beat themselves up more than other individuals will beat themselves. And when I say that, you know, is we are our biggest hindrance in that we are, I'll give you an example. We talk ourselves out of applying for a job maybe because we said, oh, they already pre-select. They know who they're going to select. Well, we don't know that. The only way you're going to know that you would get selected for the job is if you empower yourself by filling the application out, meeting all the prerequisites, submitting the application, and waiting and see what falls out. What if no one else put in for the job but you? Then you empower yourself. You have empowered yourself to succeed. But if you have that negative thinking, I like the way Joyce Meyer says it. She says thinking. If you have that thinking way that, oh, I can't get that job because someone else is going to get it, and I have someone else's name on it, then you won't get it. You will talk yourself out of it. So the biggest obstacle I could see in anyone's life is themselves. If they take self out of the way, they can succeed in anything. And I believe there are certain keys in order to be successful. And I know in Stepping Stone to Success, I put a few keys in there, but I'll give you three of them. One of them is to be steadfast in what you do. Be focused on your goals and your objectives. And then you must have a passion for what you do and be committed to what you do. And then if you have the right attitude. Attitude is everything. You know, living and life is about attitude. You have to have the right attitude. You have to be patient. You have to be persistent. You have to take time to enjoy the seasons and the cycles of life. And when I say that, meaning living a balanced life, you know, looking at your business, your family, and your community, you have to take a holistic approach to life and to the attitude that you bring to others.
You know, that's so very important. And it's so true that people do get in their own way, whether it's their negative self-talk or their belief system or just their own self-doubts, as you were talking about, before they've already anticipated failure, like you said, before they've even tried, and they back down. And so what you're talking about in terms of the principles, the keys to success are really essential, not backing down, having that sense of persistence. Now, let's talk a little bit about you. What would you say the biggest contribution in your professional success is all about? What was that? What is it? And what do you attribute it to?
The biggest contribution in my success, I would like to say, would be my parents. My parents, their values and beliefs that they instilled in me over the years. And I have to say, I have to put this first, my faith. I like to say my faith, my family, and those friends that are in my inner circle. They all contributed to my success. I had great mentors. I said, if you want to be successful, you have to be a mentor as well. You have to be mentored, and you have to be a mentor as well. But the one thing that I know for me is that you have to be open to change in order to be successful. We have to change our cognitive process, and that requires time, effort, and commitment. And you basically have to change your mindset if you want to become successful. For me, failure was not an option, but if I fail, I learn from my failures.
You know, it's so, everything you're saying, I totally agree with, and mentoring, as you and I know, because we've had conversations about that, is so very, very important, as well as being mentored. Now, you're talking about going that your parents have really been the biggest contribution. There are some people who don't have that same kind of family support that you had, and that's a blessing. And yet, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to seek someone in the community, a leader, or Sunday school teacher or teacher. I love that story about, I think it's Little Johnny or Little Tommy, you know, where that teacher, you know, just took the time with him. But they can, and for young kids, because I work with the disenfranchised youth, you can go to nonprofit organizations like ATIC and MG Center for Excellence, and we would pair you up with a mentor. Most churches have mentors in their database, and most schools will be able to find mentors for individuals. And I say, you know, get involved in social networks and nonprofit organizations, professional groups, like the Professional Women's Network that we are a part of.
You know, I love the fact that you've talked about other ways for people to get the support, because it's not always, as you know, it's not always readily available in the family, but that's no reason to give up. Now, we had talked earlier about leading from where you are, and you define leadership in so many ways, and that's what you do when you go out and you empower youth and you talk to all diverse organizations, like I heard you last summer. So what do you mean, leading from where you are? What is that about, Sita?
Okay, leading from where you are, if you look at the definition now, when we look at how leadership is defined, it's the ability to guide, direct, or influence people. That's the bottom line. My definition for influence is about the people and the ability to transform others, not the position you hold. For instance, you could lead from the bottom of the organization. When you look at the leader that's on the top, I'm a visual person. The leader is on the top of the pyramid, but on the bottom, if you look at a triangle, the bottom is what's holding the top part of the pyramid up. If you don't have those people at the bottom, you can't lead no one. You'll be leading yourself. So the people on the bottom should be inclusive in the decision-making process, and they are more powerful in some incidents in making decisions in an organization. I would say train everyone, not just how, but why the organization exists. Train everyone from the bottom to the top why the organization exists. What is their portion of that pie? You look at an apple pie and you cut a piece of apple pie and you give it to Dr. White. Why do you get this piece of pie, Dr. White? Because you are critical to the success, the mental, emotional success of others.
You know, that's so,
so
vital.
Train the team. Yeah, you train them on the methodology, not on book methodology, but train them on methods, not just on the book. Have them to be inclusive in everything. So leaders could, leading from where you are, mean that individuals could break or make a leader, because you have to be a good follower in order to make a good leader.
You know, it's so very, very important to, like you said, to value everyone in the organization, because even though, and I'm just going to use an example, let's say you're working with a school. Now, you may think that the janitorial position is a lowly position, but it's amazing that those individuals may have some incredible insight and can make an incredible contribution. And let's not just go on titles, like you said. Let's train everyone. So I think that's so very essential. Now, let's talk a little bit more about your book, because we spoke yesterday and you had a special offer for our listeners, and I'm delighted about that. So tell us what that's all about.
Okay, well, for all the individuals that's listening right now, if you do order Stepping Stones to Success, which is I co-authored with Jack Canfield, Deepak Chopra, and Dennis Whitley. And in this book, you will discover how to bring up your inner strength to rise to the top, not by myself only, but by others. And you will build your bridge to cross over, learn how to build your bridge to cross over from point A to point B, and discover your inner leadership. And you will also learn a lot about keys to unlocking your success. If you order this book from me today, within the next 48 hours, you get a free copy of Joy Unspeakable, a Spiritual Jambalaya, and that's a $12 value. The book is only $20 online at www.cedargibson.com, and we appreciate your order, and that's my gift to you.
Well, thank you so much for that generous offer, and I want to encourage people to do that, because I have this book, like I said, it's sitting here on my desk, and it's been such an invaluable resource, Sita, and your chapter is also superb, and it's a way for people, no matter where they are in life, no matter what kind of career they're in, no matter what age they're in, to take a look and to see what they need to move forward and to get even more success if they're already successful, and if they're not, to see what the stepping stones are for success. So before you leave, what's one important, very brief message that you want to impart to our listening audience, Sita?
I would like to tell them, you know, success doesn't just drop in your life. You must position yourself for success. So I like to tell them that everyone could live life without limits, but you have to be prepared. You have to prepare yourself. You have to educate yourself. You have to network, and you have to build good, sound relationships. Relationships is what gives you what I like to call your next level blessing. Life is about living, and it's also about giving. So if you get, you have to give back. Volunteering and giving back is a part of being successful. Get a mentor, get a life coach like Dr. Joanne White or myself, and live life to the fullest, because tomorrow is not promised. And God bless you.
What a beautiful message. Thank you. And it's really powerful, and it gets to the heart, and it really talks about everything that you are, a mentor, a leader, and someone who practices what she preaches in terms of giving back and making a beautiful contribution to the community and to the world. Thank you so much, Sita, for being on the show.
Thank you, Dr. White. It was my pleasure.
We'll do it again sometime. Have a blessed day.
Likewise, and may God bless everyone that's listening.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye. In just a few minutes, I'm going to introduce you to my second guest, Jack Watts. And he's been featured in the Huffington Post and he's been a guest on numerous media outlets, including ABC and PBS. His book, Recovering from Religious Abuse, 11 Steps to Spiritual Freedom, is really all about helping wounded Christians reconnect with a loving God. Now, Jack just didn't write this book without living through some of this, what he calls religious abuse. So we're going to talk to him about that and really get more of a sense of his story as well, because I think that sometimes when people write from their personal experience, there's something really strongly that comes through, that message that's really profound and comes deep from the heart and souls of the authors. And I think that's what Jack exemplifies as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit more. Jack focuses in his book on emotional and mental religious abuse that misuses the trappings of religion. He says that many who've suffered such abuse plunge into a revolving door of self-destructive behavior that spirals out of control. And his book offers a practical 11-step recovery program. Jack received an MA from Baylor University in Church-State Studies and an ABD at Emory University in International Politics. And for the past 30 years, Watts has been running a small business specializing in marketing and consulting for nonprofit organizations and serving Christian ministries and publishers. And as Jack says, in the last few years, he's been spending a lot of time, more time writing than anything else. And recently, we have another book that he co-authored called We Believe, 30 Days to Understanding Your American Heritage. Jack Watts, hello and welcome. How are you?
Well, I am just doing very well, and I mean to tell you, I was just thoroughly enjoying listening to all of these nice things being said about myself.
You know, it's funny because people do send in some bio, and then I research it, and it's all true. But then when you hear it, like you said, you hear it, and you go, wow, because I've had so many guests say, wow, is that me? Did I do that? So yes, you did, and it's a pleasure to have you. And we're talking about, really, for a lot of people, a very difficult and even a painful topic. So what was your need to write this book?
Well, in working for Christian ministries, essentially, and Christian publishers for 30 years as an outside consultant, but someone who was immediately put in the inside circles, I have seen religious abuse occur hundreds of times, and the impact upon those who are the recipients is almost as catastrophic as a mom or dad saying, I wish you were never born. Not quite, but close, because what it does is it wounds the person and tells the person that they are not okay and that they are not okay with God, and the person who is the recipient goes off saying, I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want anything to do with the ministry. I don't want to have anything to do with the church. And I don't want to have anything to do with God, because he should have done something to stop it. And he didn't. So they go off. Yeah. they go off and they say, I will get even with you by hurting me. So they stay in this wounded state, and the pain is so great that they start drinking, overeating, overspending, looking at pornography, getting involved in affairs, all of the kind of things that people do to medicate really deep pain in their heart. They're God's people, so they're not happy, because sin is not, it's just not fun once you're a believer. It can be for a little bit, obviously, but you know, the hangover from it is so extraordinary that they just go further and further down. Now, interestingly, at the same month that my book came out, which was in February, the Barna Group came out with some research that said that that was about the religious practices of American people, and one of the findings was that fully one-third are what they categorize as completely unchurched. Now, when they broke that down, they found out that there were 37% of those people, when you included their families, that it had such a bad negative experience within Christianity that they retreated so far that now they're considered unchurched. And that comes out to a total of 37 million people. That would be the same as like every man, woman, or child in the state of California, which I believe is where I am right now. Isn't that correct?
I'm in New Jersey. I don't know where you're calling in from. Where are
well,
you?
I'm calling from Atlanta. I thought that the area code was California. I guess I was wrong about that. So I'm on the wrong side of the or the entire nation of Canada, man, woman, and child. That's how many people have had a negative experience. Now, that doesn't necessarily rise to the level of spiritual abuse, but the people who have been spiritually abused would be a subset of that 37 million, and it is many million that have. And I thought to myself, why doesn't somebody do something about it? And I finally got to the point where I said, you know, Lord Acton said, the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And I'll be darned. I am not going to just not do anything. So I decided that I would use my own experiences, having gone through religious abuse several times, but also as a result of it, through alcoholism. So I have 18 years of sobriety, and I used a lot of my recovery tools, but this isn't like exactly one-for-one, the 12-step approach for AA, but a lot of the recovery things are similar. So I used it to help people who have experienced these wounds to get back on track and recognizing that they have a couple of fundamental errors in their thinking. And one of them is that God should have done something and therefore God's part of the abuse. It's not true.
Jack, yes. I totally agree with you. And I just want to interject a little bit because I want people to really firstly recognize that 37%, that's a pretty large number. And I
37% of the unchurched.
Right.
Which would be 100 million. So it's, 40 million people essentially.
Right. And
or 12% of the population.
Right. That's very significant. But also that people who, and I love how you use the word hangover from religious abuse, people who go through this religious abuse, as you were saying earlier, do a disservice to themselves. They really hurt themselves, as you were talking about. And they turn away from God, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit too. They turn away from God, as you said, thinking that and blaming God that it's real, that God should have done something to stop that.
Well, they essentially say, I'll get even with you, I'll hurt me.
Right, so they're really almost doing a little bit of self abuse when they go back and do that because they're products of abuse too. So, many people are used to the definition of abuse as abuse of ministers with sexual abuse, but your whole concept is very, very different, and I think Can we just talk about that a little bit? Because I want our listeners to really understand what religious abuse is. What is it, and how does it come about, Jack?
Well, it's a large continuum. So any kind of sexual abuse is obviously at the far end of it. Right next to it would be financial abuse, and that would be give your money to God, but be sure and use my address. And, you throw $20 on the plate and Jesus will give you $200. Those kinds of things end up being very abusive. But more often than not, it's an emotional abuse where someone uses their religious authority for their own ends and in so doing exploits another person, hurting that person and making that person's self-worth diminish, and their relationship with God suffers as a result of it. So that's kind of the key, and that's where most people get hurt. We're not talking about confronting somebody with something that they're doing that's fundamentally wrong. We're talking about somebody promoting their own program that they believe is God's program, and anybody that gets involved with their program is getting, is going against God's will. And so they use those kinds of things to hurt and wound people, and it happens routinely all the time.
So it's not just for youth or children that people who are really go through abuse. It's really much more widespread than that, and when people are in a religious and a prayerful and a spiritual mode, there's a sense of really a sense of opening themselves up, opening their hearts up, a sense of being vulnerable, and so it's what you're saying is that many churches, many people who are involved in positions in the church are taking advantage of that vulnerability. Is that correct?
Yes. And the part that makes it abusive is that they believe they're doing the right thing and that they have a right to hurt the people that they do, and the people that are the recipients of it are just devastated. And so they become used, abused, and then finally discarded, and the churches are consumed with saving the lost, but they have no care whatsoever for the people that they spit out who, are on the emotional junk heap of Christianity. And, you've heard that expression, Christianity is the only religion the only army in the world that shoots its wounded. Well, people say that a lot because there's some truth to it. And so these wounded people are castigated and feel like that their relationship with God is adversely impacted, and they just struggle and they don't do well, and yet they never think of this. Who understands abuse better than Christ, who was spit upon, sworn at, beaten, stripped naked, hung on a cross, and murdered? By whom? Religious leaders who didn't like what he was doing. So he understands better than anyone what religious abuse is, and he wants these people back, and he does not like what has happened to them. And they can recover, and their lives can be everything that they were ever created to be, but they got to get back on track, and I have put together a way that can help them do so.
And we're going to talk about that and some of the tools in just one moment, but there's something that disturbs me, and I need to ask you that. How is it that these people who are utilizing the church in that way think that they're right, because what you just said is that they don't think that they're abusing their position, and so they need some help themselves
Well, but they do.
But how do they think they're doing the right thing? Have you ever spoken?
Well, there's a lot of narcissism that is rampant among some of the major leaders in evangelical Christianity, and to the point where there's a, you know, in their ministries, there are two sets of rules, the rules for everybody else and the rules for them, and because they're in such intimate contact with God, he doesn't mind that they do this, that, and the other to people. And that, of course, that's where all the scandals come from, is essentially that they think that they're above being servants. And instead of serving others, they are there to be served by everyone else. And they get yes men around them to validate what they're doing. And they have the Queen of Hearts syndrome, which is if somebody goes against them, off with their heads, figuratively speaking.
Right. Why do you think, Jack, religious abuse is so often overlooked in today's society?
Well, that's a good question. I'll give you an example of it. When I came out with my book, Recovering from Religious Abuse, Barnes & Noble picked it up, and it's in every Barnes & Noble in America, but you couldn't find it in a Lifeway Christian bookstore, which is the largest chain, nor even me on there as a potential author, even though this is a Simon & Schuster book. This isn't a little rinky-dink thing. They didn't want to acknowledge that there's a problem.
So there was fear attached to really acknowledging it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And my experience with the religious abusers is that if you bring something up, they become very defensive and they justify their actions. And you don't find, like when Nathan confronted David and said, "Thou art that man," and David immediately repented. I have never seen one of them ever turn around and say, "Oh my goodness, I've been completely wrong about this, and I need to do something to stop." That just isn't in the framework. So there's some fundamental flaws that go all the way through much of what we do, and these people who are the abusers get away with it, and the people who are abused say, "Well, you know, I don't want to hurt God's work," and so they just take it and go away, very hurt and angry, which turns into bitterness and a defeated mentality and a lifestyle that goes contrary to everything that they believe, and they end up on the emotional junk heap of society.
Why do you think that these people, the people who've been abused, Jack, find it so difficult? They've been wounded by religion. They go on, like you said, on that whole cycle. Why do you think it's so difficult for them to take a step, even just the first step forward towards their recovery?
Well, a couple of things. One, they accept at least some of the castigation is true, so they go away with these wounds, and then they have a very hard time getting back on the right track. It's they're wounded, and wounded people who are disconnected, instead of turning back to God, they turn to vice. Lots of them.
Which is really very unfortunate, and it doesn't help them at all. It really hinders them, and it doesn't get them closer to themselves or their families or to God. So this book...
They have to admit to themselves that there's something, say, okay, they will always say things like, "I didn't create this problem. He created this problem. He needs to apologize to me first." And a narcissist will never apologize because they never, it's not in their nature, and they don't believe that they're wrong. So, you know, even though the wounded person is right most of the time, they still are responsible for getting themselves back on track with the Lord. And the Lord's right there waiting for them to do so, but they've got to take the initiative. They've got to say, okay, my life shipwreck where it is right now, and I'm not going to live like this anymore. I'm not going to pursue self-defeating behavior. Instead, I'm going to get back into contact with God. I'm going to recognize and acknowledge that He's not the author of the abuse. Abusive people are, and that He wants me back, and He does.
Well, that's really important that people take responsibility, just like in a 12-step program, admitting that you're an alcoholic. Now, let's talk a little bit about your book, because we only have a few more moments, and I want people to get the most from what your book has to offer. Can you explain a couple of the helpful tools that you've included in your book?
Well, yes. If you what I just went through essentially in just a second ago were the first four steps of it. But once somebody recognizes that God is not the abuser, then what they need to do is they need to sit down and write out their entire experience, including everything that they have done and everybody that they have wounded along the way. An entire history of exactly what has happened, and then be willing to make amends to the people that they've wounded, because abuse begets abuse, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And wounded people become very abusive themselves in many of the things that they do. Somebody that gets in trouble in church comes home and takes it out on his family. So they've got to get these things straight, and then to tell someone and go through the steps with the person and say, this is what I've done, and be completely forthright, not just with God, but with another trusted human being, ultimately getting to the point where they are able to forgive the abuser. Not that they have to go back and sit at the feet of an abusive person ever again, but if you don't forgive others, then you really are hurting yourself and continue to hurt yourself. And many people say, I don't care what happens. I will never forgive that person. And all it does is hurt them and not the person that abuses them. They have to end up.
That's so important, because people really, I think, forgiveness, and that was one of my questions, so I'm really glad that you addressed it, because I think that forgiveness is key, no matter, and like you said, Jack, you're so right on. You don't necessarily have to go back and forgive the person verbally or write them a letter, but you do have to do that in your heart, because it's so important for you to be able to move on. Jack, how can people, we only have another minute, how can people get a hold of your book?
You can get it at any Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Amazon. You can go to my website and take a look at everything. And my website is pushingjesus.com.
So would you repeat that again, please, for our listeners?
Pushingjesus.com.
And the title
and
of your book, because I went...
It's Recovering from Religious Abuse.
I went to on Amazon to try to upload the cover of your book for our listeners, and I wasn't able to, and I thought, that's strange. So, but now I'm going to check, because I want it back on here. So I think your work, Jack, is so very, very important. I think so many people can benefit from your personal experience and from your insight and from your writing and from the way that you address the challenges and the really upset and horror to some extent of religious abuse. And I think that you can help so many people, and your book really points the way. So again, I know it's been a very short time. We could do this for many, many hours, but I want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your book and your insight with us, and also touching upon a subject, Jack, that you went through that very horrific experience, and I want to thank you for sharing that with us.
You know, it's interesting. Almost everybody knows somebody that's been religiously abused if they haven't themselves. It's it's so extensive in our society. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, Jack, and have a blessed day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And, you know, it's so very important, folks, as Jack was saying, forgiveness is the key. And so no matter where you are or no matter what's been going on in your life, take a moment, and it doesn't have to be now, but take a moment to look back on what you've done without blaming yourself or pitying yourself or blaming somebody else, and find some time to really practice forgiveness. And I also think that self-forgiveness is incredibly, incredibly important, because we need to be able to honor that we are human, that we do make mistakes, that we do have vulnerabilities, and that it's so important to move on. Now, both Jack and Sita, in some way, are courageous leaders in what they're doing and in what they're putting out. And so I want to read a little bit from one of my books. It's a co-authored book, Learning to Love Yourself. And it talks about courageous leadership. And then I'm going to introduce some of our wonderful upcoming guests. And I talk about inside all of us is the potential for leadership. Whether you own a business, run a household, you're expected to lead with passion, compassion, and confidence. And it doesn't matter if you faced those situations before. In today's world, a leader must steer others with forthright action and with integrity. And people need more than just a vision to follow. They want a leader who demonstrates honesty and who can unify them and all their conflicting ideas. One who recognizes diversity and individuality and honors those differences, yet simultaneously knows how to pull together people under one common umbrella. And I think that's important for any leader. And think about how you are a leader in your own life and how you can be more of a leader in your life and impact those people around you, whether it's your family or friends or people in your business or careers. And find ways, as Sita and Jack have done, to give back in some way and to honor yourself and also honor the other people in your life and the other people on the planet, and know that just one person, as Sita's story demonstrated, can really make a profound difference. Next week, we have Sumner Davenport, who's a solutions consultant, a bounce back expert, and a speaker, and also an author of many books, and we'll talk about her. And she's on April 13th. And then we're going to hear from the amazing Creston, who's been called the world's foremost mentalist, and he's going to demonstrate the power of the human mind and give us predictions, so tune in for that. And coming April 27th, we have Janet Powers, who is a marketing guru, entrepreneur, and a radio show host, and the founder and executive diva of the Diva Toolbox. And also that same day, April 27th, we have Suzanne Venker, who is an author and wrote The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. And my guests are very, very diverse, because I think that what that says is that we're honoring diversity in our world. All of us do not come from the same mold. All of us certainly have different experiences, have different backgrounds, and yet there needs to be some commonality, something that draws all of us together. And I like to have many guests who really bring forth their ability to shine and their ability to in some way impact upon us and impact upon our lives, and to allow us to sort of sit back for a moment and maybe pause and think about how we can do something differently, how we can empower ourselves a little better, how we can get closer to our spiritual roots, how we can really make a difference in our lives and also in the lives of other people. This is Dr. Joanne White, and you can reach me at drjoannewhite.org or drjoannewhite.com. I have many books and free articles and CDs. So just check me out. Check out our other wonderful guests, because they have so much to offer, as do you. And today, wherever you are, take one moment to really honor yourself and think about the riches that you have inside of you and live a very blessed life. Thank you so much for being a part of our show, because it's you that makes a difference. And we'll see you next week. Take care, and thanks for sharing your day with us.
Been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting divatoolbox.com and blogtalkradio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.